Hey gang, are you tired of filling up your phone with all your favorite podcasts? You stream your movies, you stream your music, why not stream your podcast? Stitcher is smart radio, on-demand news, talk, and more for your mobile phone. Stitcher brings podcast and radio listeners a better way to listen to their favorite shows and helps them discover new content by delivering personalized audio streams on demand right to your smartphone. How Did I Get Here is on Stitcher along with 20,000 other shows. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself,
how did I get here? And now here is your host, John Howdy.
All right, hello. I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a great show for you guys today. Kate and Nick from KP and the Boom Boom are here. You can find them at kpbbmusic.com. They have a couple of EPs out, Splash and Feel It. They're fantastic. You might have seen them if you live in Austin opening for Snoop Dogg or at an ACL after party or out at Utopia Fest. They do a lot of stuff. They're out there doing a lot of shows all the time. And they also have a debut full-length album coming later on this year. I had a great time talking to Nick and Kate. They're playing actually tomorrow night, January 23rd, Saturday, January 23rd, at Geraldine's here in Austin. If you're not in Austin, as I said, go to kpbbmusic.com and stick around, enjoy our conversation, get to know Kate and Nick, as they are very entertaining and very fun to talk to. Before we get to that, let me tell you what's going on with me. I think what's going on with all of us, been a lot of people dying in music and stuff. If you live in Austin, you have the extra thing of Paul Ray. But then also Monday was like this explosion of death with like Blowfly and Dallas Taylor from Crosby, Stills and Nash, the drummer from Mott the Hoople, whose name escapes me right now, Glenn Frey from the Eagles. My God, what's going on? Bowie, Scott Weiland, Lemmy. I mean, some are bigger surprises than others, but Jesus, what a heavy thing. I hope you're all getting through it okay. I know that, you know, there's a lot of fans out there of music. A lot of fans out there of those guys, you know, a lot of tributes going on. That's kind of nice. You can even go on Spotify and find all these great playlists of stuff like Underground Bowie, Popular Bowie. I'm sure there's Eagles ones now. Solo Glenn Frey ones. Ba-da-da, ba-da-da-da. You know, You Belong to the City. It's a good song. Anyway, hey, all right. I hope you guys all have a great weekend. If you're in Houston, Skyrocket will be playing at the Continental Club tonight. Friday, January 22nd. And don't forget, tomorrow night, KP and the Boom Boom, Saturday, January 23rd at Geraldine's here in Austin. Go to kpbbmusic.com to find out more about them. Pick up their EP, Splash and Feel It, and enjoy my conversation with Kate and Nick from KP and the Boom Boom. I had a great time talking to them, and I'm sure you'll have a great time getting to know them. Have a great weekend. Thank you for listening, and let's get down. KP and the Boom Boom. I've been jamming your stuff for the last couple of days.
Cool. Oh, cool.
Yeah. It's how big is the band when you play normally? Because in that video, it looks like there's like 9 people or something.
You know,
in the video for Feel It, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Normally there is 6 of us.
Okay.
6 of us. But when we expand, like when we play ACL Live and when we have big shows,
right,
we'll go to 8 people.
Okay.
Yeah.
You'll go to 8.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you bring in? Like, what's the extra 2 people?
We'll do a background vocalist and a trumpet player, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So how long have you guys been around? like as a band? A couple years?
We have been together since 2010. When I first came here, actually, but we didn't. I came here in the summer, and at the time, we were very serious about keeping a band because I was going to go back to England, and you know, I was just kind of here for a long vacation. But I ended up staying, and we renamed the band and decided we wanted to write original content and make it a more serious thing at the start of 2011 is when we. When we became KP and the Boom Boom.
So yeah. Why were you here?
Why
were you here at that, like, originally before you decided to stay?
I'd been invited by some friends at the time that were musicians, and I had met them on my travels around South America. And actually, I was in Central America at the time in Guatemala, and uh-huh. I sang an open mic event, singing and playing guitar,
right?
And two Americans were in the audience, and they were like, man, we gotta form a band with you. So I stayed extra in Guatemala, stayed with them for a month, formed a band, and then a year later I kept in contact, and a year later they invited me to Austin.
What band was that?
It was just called the Kate Priestley Band. I mean, I didn't love the name.
That's your name, but that's what KP
yeah
stands
that's
for?
my name, but at the time I think I was kind of more naive, and I was new to music, and they were like, we're going to call it the Kate Priestley Band, and this is what we're going to do. You know, I think they had the upper hand, really, because they were teaching me about being in a band. I'd never been in a band before. So there was a lot of lessons for me to learn along the way. You know, there still is. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. And then I came to Austin and just was here for 2 months. I had my, plans to move to London when I was back in England, and anyway, the guy said, you're gonna love it so much, you're gonna stay. And you know, 2016, I'm still here
doing it.
Yeah.
How did you guys meet?
It's a part of that story, actually. It's very serendipitous. So when she came, one of the musicians that she met in Guatemala,
yeah,
I guess he was like kind of tapped into the academic music circuit.
Yeah, he went to school with one of the teachers at UT.
Right, and so one of the professors at UT, our guitar player, was getting his master's in classical guitar performance at UT. Uh-huh. And so he recommended Brian, our guitar player, to play in the band. And I lived with Brian, and so did the drummer.
Yeah. And that's kind of how we got with incorporated. Carolyn, who is in the band too. Yeah, she came on like a couple weeks later. Player. Yeah.
Wow. It's all like very serendipitous. Mm-hmm. And did you guys all have the same taste in music? Like, you know, how did you end up playing?
No. No. Okay. Yeah.
Well, that must have been weird. Whose direction is it? Like what?
You know, it's like my direction in the way that I have the vision and I write the lyrics, so I want the music to tell a story. But when we all came together, you know, we all have completely different backgrounds. You know, I wasn't brought up in this country, so my musical influences are different. Sometimes they cross over, but sometimes they don't.
Can I tell you something that I noticed? And tell me if it's done on purpose. Mm-hmm. But okay, there's like American soul music, but then there's also like British soul mm-hmm. music, like Soul to Soul and all these kind of, okay. And there's these sort of changes that these guys use, that you guys use. You guys use British soul changes more than like mm-hmm. staying on the one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we had that. We just played at One to One last week. We opened for Mingo Fish Trap, and somebody came up to me afterwards and said, I love this and this and this about your band. She said, in the European influence, she said, I can hear it in your music.
You can totally hear it. You can totally hear it. If I hadn't met you and knew that you were from UK, mm-hmm. I would be like, what the are these guys like fucking like obsessed with European like soul music and British soul music? Mm-hmm. Like, it's crazy. It's really good, mm-hmm. man.
Thank you.
So okay, so you guys met, and then how did you come up with the sound? Like, how did that?
It was a long process.
It's definitely been a long learning process, hearing each other. And I think at first, you know, we had all these different genre influences, so each song would be very different in the sound, and we realized that that was confusing people, you know, to have a set where one song's got maybe a reggae influence, another song's got like this real world, strange offbeat influence, you know. So it was, I think we now finally came to a place the last 2 years where we started to just cross it all together in. We just finally made our music, what's the word?
Cohesive.
Right, where it comes into you and it comes out of a filter that is now you guys.
Exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
That's a hard thing to get going.
And yeah. I think it was confusing us, too, not having, like, an identity, you know, because we would have one song that sounded very blues Americana, and then we would have another song that was more hip-hop, and it was just really hard to... It was a long process to take everyone's input and synthesize it into what KP and the Boom Boom was. And I think it's taken us a little bit longer to sort of get off the ground because of that. Because, you know, there's not one person writing all the songs and saying, this is how it goes, this is what you play. Right. But in the end, I think it's a lot more rewarding for us to be able to work together like that and create something that everyone is really passionate about and everyone has input in.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. In your new album, what's is it recorded?
It is.
Yes.
Okay. And it's mastered.
We're mixing it right now.
Yeah.
And it's going to be mastered by Dave McNair.
Yes, that's the plan.
What's different now? Is something different?
There's something different from if you hear our old EPs to the new album, you'll hear the cohesiveness.
Okay.
And it's a unique sound, you know, like, you know, we love Hiatus Coyote. If you heard of that band from Australia?
No.
They're called say Future R&B. Is that what they say?
Future Soul R&B.
And they're just so experimental and amazing. You know, they opened for Erykah Badu. They have been nominated for their second Grammy this time for Best R&B. It's like something you've never, ever heard before. And a lot of people have referenced them when they hear our sound too, because it's just, it's really unique what we've created, the sound. And you'll hear that on the new album. We finally made it all cohesive, all these different sounds, but it's still like a breath of fresh air, something very different. Yeah.
What's the writing process with you guys? Like, what do you guys have jams and then you come in and sing over them? Or do you go like, what happens?
No.
Do you play stuff? You play guitar?
I'm taking guitar lessons right now and learning guitar, but I don't play in the band an instrument.
Okay.
But sometimes, like, say for Breathe In, Breathe Out and some of those chords on Brave, like, I'll play some very basic chords to show the band. It's a mixture. Like, sometimes I'll come up with a melody, an idea, and I'll sing it and record it. Sometimes I'll have to sing the melody or very basically play it. And then I'll usually ask Nick and Brian primarily to help me finish the song and get it all together. Then other times Nick will already have something, a foundation of different sections, which we don't really know yet if it's a chorus or a verse, you know.
Mm-hmm. Just have some different.
And Carolyn will too. And Brian doesn't necessarily write the music, but he's very crucial in helping us bring it all together.
The arrangements
and new different chords that he can hear to help us get into another section. And
Do you guys have a place? Like, you guys have a room locked out with your stuff set up all the time, or do you?
Yeah, Brian's house.
Yeah.
It's his garage.
We've been using his garage for years, and it's, you know, I mean, we've occasionally had practice rooms, but some of them, you know, the noise bleeds through, and it's usually metal bands playing next door.
I don't want to say the name of the place, but I used to rehearse there.
There are only a few places.
And I don't anymore.
Yeah.
Because I at one point I remember having, I'm sorry to go into a thing about me, but at one point I had a room locked out, paid monthly, and a locker, not the smallest locker, a medium locker, paying monthly. And I would go in there when they opened at 11 in the morning. And we had this organ in there. We had just this whole studio thing set up in there. We were writing and recording our demos for our next record with my band. And we were a band. We had a deal and stuff. And we were We were working on our thing, okay? And we would be the only band in all of the place. And there'd be like an hourly band coming in at like 1 p.m. to rehearse. The only other band in the place. And they would put them in the room right next to us to the point where we would go out there and be like, dude, this is a huge place. No, this is the rooms that we go and put them in this order and we got to come in on this. And you're like, those rooms are all around our rooms. Like, who do we talk to? Like, we're paying you guys. I mean, I remember, I think at one point we were paying like $1,400 a month.
Jeez, wow. Man.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was one of the things, like, it gets, no, we understand, yeah. And we, even, you know, in the summertime, it gets pretty brutal in the garage. We've got all the fans going. Yeah. And we discussed, like, we really should hire somewhere, but that was one of the arguments was, like, the bleed through and the noise and the dark rooms, you know, sometimes they kind of smell. And
I rehearse at Space. I have a lockout room there now. It's awesome.
Space is awesome.
Windows, nice. Yeah,
and they separate the people that are playing. They know what's going on.
Yeah, that's a good one. We did some rehearsals for our last EP there, didn't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you do have a place, right? So how painful is the process of, like, with six people, like...
It varies. It really does.
Okay. It can be painful, though.
It can be painful.
I think, you know, I think even from the last material that we wrote for this album, you know, in the next few weeks, we can certainly start to, I think it's time to go back to rehearsing and writing new music. And, you know, I think we're going to have to sit down and discuss the process of how we do it. Because I don't necessarily feel like it's been fully... It's not that it's not productive in the past. It's just there's so much input from everyone that it's really hard to, I think, be as efficient and productive as possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we have to figure out how we can do that moving forward.
And it's tough, and I don't even know how the dynamic works. But in that amount of people, there's got to be one person that takes their part personally. And that's always it. Like, when you have when you're trying to make a thing, like, I can only really work with people that can look at the big picture of the song.
Mm-hmm.
And if it means, like, you just hit one note, you know, every minute and a half, if that's what's best for the song, then that's what you should want to do.
Yes.
Yeah. Not like,
right.
Or whatever, you know.
Right.
Whatever it is. Mm-hmm. That's a tough thing, because sometimes those arguments are... This person's feelings are hurt because they really liked the thing that they were contributing as a thing more than does this really serve the song as well. That's hard. That's a hard thing to. That's a maturity that. It's hard to find people that all think like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we. I mean, even from our sound used to be. I mean, we still got a very full sound with the amount of musicians, but it used to be way busier when we first started in those first couple of years. And every time we're, you know, trying to strip down a little bit or just create more space in the music, you know.
Well, in soul and funk and music, rhythmic music, the real groove happens in the space. You know what I mean? Like, that's where it's all going down. At least that's what I've been taught.
Yeah. Absolutely. Our new drummer's been holding the groove really well for us as well.
Great pocket drummer.
Yeah.
Where did you guys record? Because you guys did the first thing with AJ, right?
No, you know, our first EP ever was with Mark Addison.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah,
oh,
like
right.
Back
I worked
in
with Addison
2011.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it was just, I guess it was more of like a demo.
Yeah, it was like a
thing.
Demo,
yeah.
And we had a really great time with him that weekend when we did that. And then after that, the one after that was at Same Sky.
Oh, yeah. I love those guys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know, I'm supposed to do a thing with David because he just made a solo.
Ah.
Sorry, my
right,
mind
did,
just
yeah.
went into a place. Okay,
he just did his first album, David.
Yeah, yeah, it's coming out.
Oh, cool. That's cool.
I think he's got his release in February sometime, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the last one was with AJ, which is like 2.5 years ago now.
Yeah,
it's been a while. Yeah.
How was that? Did you learn? Tell me, like, okay, what did you learn going in with Addison? Because that's definitely a song guy. I mean, I've worked with him a lot, like writing and recording and stuff.
Man, I'm trying to think. That was like
It was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
That was like 2011?
Yeah, it was 5 years ago now. I can't really necessarily remember, you know. The one thing I really did take, it was with AJ, actually, the last producer that we worked with. He came to space with us, and we rented out these rooms for, you know, a couple of times he'd come and see us. And he really helped us break down our songs. He's like, guys, your songs are like, you know, 7 minutes, 6 minutes long. Yeah. Like, for radio play, this is not going to work.
He came in with the scissors.
Yeah. He's like, I understand for live show that you want to do this. Keep doing it. It's great. But for the... for an, you know, EP or an album, you have to trim the fat. And, you know, he really helped us, I think in a different way and let go of certain sections that we'd held on to that we thought we needed to record. But it was just realizing that we had to approach recording in a different way.
That's it, like looking at the big picture.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what's cool as shit about that, and hopefully it did ingrain, is that next time you would go work with him, he wouldn't have to bring the scissors because you... all of a sudden leave those sessions with your own set of scissors.
Exactly. Yeah.
And when you start writing, you go like, you stop yourself. You go, oh, guys, we're going into a, you know, whatever this section is that's going to waste time in the big picture of the song. Oh, that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
That's my favorite part, is just learning, working with new people and learning what they know and then being able to apply that from just going forward every single time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's amazing. They pass down their knowledge. I've learned amazing shit from Addison, like tons of stuff, and from AJ I can't even begin to tell you, like, he and I have a really long relationship of working together.
He's a cool guy. And the guy that we've been
Who did your new record,
we recorded all the rhythm section and the lead vocals, the horns at recording facility with Chico Jones.
I don't know that place.
Hear that? It's on the east side. It's on East 5th.
East 5th, yeah.
And he was really knowledgeable. He was a great engineer. And then the producer that we had was Eddie Hobazol, which is a jazz guy. You know, he's a jazz teacher, jazz musician, and he's done producing. And we've actually found it, I wouldn't say it was... I mean, it was kind of difficult when we were going through the different studios this time. We've really wanted to make sure somebody understood our sound, all the different elements that we incorporate. And, you know, a lot of people we just felt would record us, but they didn't fully understand what we were about, you know.
And you needed someone to keep their eye on the vision.
Exactly. Yeah. And we have that jazz influence in our stuff as well, which Eddie was able to take and fully embrace and understand. So... you know, one guy that we went to see was like, guys, you're going to struggle in this town. He said, most producers know how to do rock and Americana music, and to have R&B and soul and this other influence, you're going to struggle. You might want to start looking outside of Austin. But it worked out for us.
Well, I look forward to hearing it. The stuff that AJ did with you guys, awesome. I mean, it's really cool, awesome. It doesn't really sound like other stuff that he's done, too. Like, that's, you know, I always get excited when my friends are out there and they're doing stuff and you're like, awesome, man. You know, you can do like one thing sounds like this and do the next thing. So that, you know, he stayed true to you guys and what you were trying to sound like.
He referenced the neo-soul straight away as well. The British neo-soul bands. He said, you guys remind me of these.
Yes. He was able to identify it
straight away.
I guess to those of us that have listened to music for a long time, because a lot of it, there was a lot of that stuff in the 80s. Like Johnny Hates Jazz. Remember that band?
No. Johnny Hates Jazz?
I don't know about Johnny Hates Jazz.
Yeah. It's a band just based on the fact that I hate Jazz Mills. Summer. No, I'm joking. I mean, send her songs. Yeah, look them up. I mean, they're you're going to probably get mad at me, but I don't think you sound like that, but there's this world of like neo-soul, like British neo-soul that I think to me started in the 80s.
Yeah, it did start in the 80s and trickled through to the early 90s with the Incognito.
Then it got stomped out by all those Ecstasy guys.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, the Manchester scene for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess you were a little kid during that time, huh?
You know, so you back in the Hacienda days. Yeah. I was too young then. And, you know, one of my things I've always said, if I could go back one night in time, I would love to be at the Hacienda in Manchester back in the rave days and just you know, go crazy dancing all night. And it just seemed like such an amazing time. And
it's exciting.
Yeah, it was so exciting. Yeah. The house music that came up, and it was great house music that came out of the early 90s.
Yeah. It's really funny because all the rhythm of it influenced everything. Like all the rock bands started having, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that Manchester beat.
Yeah.
That was so popular then. What about you? Where did you come up, Nick?
I'm a Texas guy.
Yeah?
Yep. But
what are your influences?
I wasn't country or anything like that. No.
Okay, that's good. I mean, not good, but good for the music that you play.
right. you know, I didn't really fully become passionate about music until really I was like 18 or so. And I heard a Radiohead song.
Yeah.
And I'd heard Radiohead before, but I was never in the state of mind to embrace it and really challenge my idea of what music could be. And then I heard it, and I was like, shit, dude, I have to know more.
What song?
Oh, it was How to Disappear Completely and Never Be Found off of Kid A.
Okay.
And from then going forward, I was just exploring constantly every single type of music that I could, and got really into Jamiroquai for a long time, which is
that's another guy.
A lot of my bass influence comes from that. Yeah,
we have certain crossovers that's another neo soul guy. We all love. Mm-hmm. So we really do like Jamiroquai, and there's bands like that that we all have common interests in. I think that's what kind of
Stevie Wonder
brings us together. Yeah, as well. Yeah. Stevie Wonder and things.
And I've been really into Bjork for a period of time too.
Yeah.
She really pushes my boundaries.
Bjork, like, she's another Bowie kind of person.
She
that's
is.
Just kind of like in her own world doing weird shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And making it work, you know, still making a living from really pushing the boundaries.
Yeah. Yeah. And I actually didn't even play bass semi-seriously until I was about 20 or 21 too. Before that, I was playing guitar.
Who was it like your bass guy when you decided to go into it? Like, give me a list of your, like, five guys.
I think it was Stuart Zender, the original bass player for Jamiroquai. You know, when I heard that,
awesome.
I was like, this is so funky,
yeah.
So punchy, I gotta do this.
Yeah.
And I love Marcus Miller.
Yeah?
And Stanley Clarke, yeah.
So kind of the smoother guys.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus Miller did, he also produced those, like, Tutu, that Miles album.
Did he?
Like, he did play people on his... I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, because he brought in weird shit. Like, they did, like, a Squiddy Politti song.
Mm-hmm.
Which is weird. Like, Miles Davis playing Squiddy Politti. go ahead. That's a terrible 80s band.
No, that's...
That a friend of mine was in. Sorry.
I mean, that pretty much covers where I'm at today, yeah.
Yeah. You never got into, like, Prague? So you stayed in the soul kind of...
Yeah,
that's
good. I never was into Prague. I appreciate it.
Yeah. What about... Oh, you guys ever check out Level 42?
Yes, yes.
They were another kind of... Some kind of soul.
Oh, man, I'd have to listen to their music for it to remember, but I do remember Level 42.
I know they were huge over there.
They were huge.
Like, they had, like,
at
one
time.
Hit here, and that was it.
I'm trying to think what was the big hit.
Because there's something about you. Baby, so right.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't be without you, baby, tonight.
Okay.
He was a bass player, too. He's like one of these dudes. Yeah.
Impromptu jam session on How to Get Here.
That you're welcome to play the melodica.
I see that there.
Although you don't know who played it last.
Yeah.
And I have some pretty sketchy ass friends.
I'll take your word for it.
It could have been AJ. So Eddie Horsball. So how did he work with you guys? He worked well? You guys?
Yeah.
Well, and he helped you?
You can start with that, Nick.
Well, I think one of the reasons that we're all very active in participating in our sound and producing and arranging and stuff like that. But I think one of the reasons we wanted someone to come in and help us who understood our sound is to sort of mediate disputes, I guess, because when you have an idea that half the band likes and half the band doesn't, it's tough to get over that.
Right.
And you want someone who's an outside party, a third party, to say, this is what sounds good, so let's go with that. And that way it takes a little bit of the tension out of it too, you know, when someone else is ultimately making a decision that you guys couldn't come to, then it's not anyone's fault for real.
I remember we had discussed why we wanted a producer as well to help be that person that kind of has the final say, or just like, you know, we trusted him to make the good call, you know, for us if there was that some people wanted to play a certain way or that kind of thing. But I loved as well, like, he has such a good ear. Our music is so intricate that he can hear something that's like, oh, I think you should have gone with a C sharp, da-da-da-da-da, you know, there. Or he'll hear, like, one person playing the slightly wrong chord or a wrong note, and he can just hear it, and then he would take us out from the studio to the piano, and he's like, well, this is what I hear, guys. And he would just play our music without even needing to know the chords. Like, he can play from ear straight away. Why don't we try this, and we do this transition, you know? So he was so great with those intricacies that not everybody could have done for us as well.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that also, it brings a band together to have a common enemy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He was, I mean, I don't think we've ever seen him like that though. But.
No. No, but they have like, gosh, really being hard on us. So you don't know when it's coming out yet?
Well, you know, we've got to discuss this week the timeline of mastering and that availability, and just kind of ramping up our funds more, because we've self-funded the album through all our gigs, and the private gigs last year really helped. So we got to get a few more of those to make sure we can finish out the album and do all the promo. I'm hoping it's going to be like April, May, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully April.
Hopefully April.
We'll
and if not, I'm sure it'll just be May, and that's it. You know, I don't think it'll be any later than that.
Do you guys have South by Southwest plans yet?
Nothing on the books so far.
Not yet.
We haven't heard back from our official application yet.
Yeah.
They started sending out, right?
Yeah, they did it, I think,
like October.
Like,
yeah.
They do the different rounds.
I think the final
round
is in
there.
January.
Yeah.
And what's the Geraldine's? What's going on there?
So we have a residency with them, and
is it once a month?
It's once a month,
okay.
Yeah.
And you've got it coming up January 23rd.
Yes.
Yes.
Right, that's your next one. Okay.
And that was really great. They reached out to us and said that they really liked us and wanted us to be one of the artists in residency there. So it's really great, you know. It's the last year we've had some really nice recognition as a band, and, you know, ACL Live asked us to open for Snoop Dogg in October, and then we did
how was that?
It was amazing.
How did his audience respond to you guys?
Very well.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. They were really into it. It was so fantastic, because it could have gone either way, you know. They're paying to see Snoop Dogg, they're not paying to see the opener.
Yeah,
but we totally won them over. It was wonderful. Yeah, really great experience.
Were you like, can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell me to shut up if you want. But there's like, you meet people and they have like a thing, and you're like, wow, this person is like, there's some shit coming off of you, like electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Were you always like that? Would people always tell you when you were a kid, like, you were like, put her on a, you know, were you destined?
I think I was, but more, you know, when I was a kid, I was like, I went to stage school for a bit, and I wanted to go full time to a performing arts school. And we decided in the end for me not to go, because it meant I had to take like two or three buses to get there. And it was in the next town. It was in Leeds.
Okay.
So it was kind of like a bit of a hassle then for me to go on my own at 12 years old on the buses. But yeah, I've always done I've done a lot of theater production, you know, when I was a kid and things like that. But when I started thinking seriously more being a singer full time, I was traveling in India when I was doing the, in 2006. This was in 2007, actually, because I stayed there for 9 months. And
why were you there?
Just traveling. Okay. I wanted, after university, I just saved my money for 2 years. And my dream since I was a kid was to see the world. I always wanted to do that. So I set off to India first, and I thought, man, I'm going to go to India first, all the colors and the culture. And as soon as I arrived, I was like, what the hell was I thinking? You know, there's like people looking like half dead in the airport terminal and cows shuddering inside the airport terminal. And I was really freaked out. Like, it was a complete shock to my system.
Yeah.
And the poverty and everything. But, you know, you have to stay strong and get through that. And it's such a rewarding experience and definitely a lot of spiritual growth traveling and being in that country. But I met a guy in a cafe, one of the local guys there, and he was like, are you a singer? And I was like, what? He's like, you look like a singer. Are you a singer? I was like, well, I like to sing. He's like, okay. He said, you need to come to my music space. He was a teacher there, teaching tabla and things like that. He said, and you're going to sing to tabla. I was like, but what, can you give me a song? Like, I didn't know how to improvise then or you know, what it was, you know, to do that. And he's like, no, you're going to improvise. Come at 4 p.m. to my shop. And I was like, okay, you know, excited but nervous. And then I went and he starts playing this tabla beat and he's like, just sing along. And eventually, you know, I started off feeling very awkward and then I sang, I think, for like 40 minutes straight. Like, we didn't even break the beat. I just kept singing. And afterwards he was like, you need music lessons. You need to start learning an instrument. And I was like, look, you know, it's not in my budget music lessons right now. And he's like, it doesn't matter. I'll give you them for free. He said, just remember me when you're famous. Remember my name when you're famous.
You stay in touch with them?
What's that, sorry?
You stay in touch with him?
No. He was called Nirmal. And
you gotta find
it
that
was
guy,
very
man.
Right. It was a very
that guy came,
strange
from outer space
yeah.
to fucking like tell you how to live your
yeah.
life.
And that was from that is when I then went to my dad got sick, so I returned back to England and then 10 months later I went to South America, bought a guitar in Argentina and started teaching myself, and that's when I sang in the open mic with my guitar and the guys saw me there, the American guys invited me to Austin a year later.
Yeah. Wow. What was the Indian guy's name again?
Nirmal.
N-I-R-M-A-L.
Nirmal.
Nirmal.
Yeah.
What a cool guy.
Yeah.
Like that, I mean, that's a really cool story.
Yeah, it was really weird. You know, sometimes when I feel like down about
what were
music
you
sing,
were
or
you
anything,
singing Western or were you like, what were you doing?
I honestly can't remember. I think I was just freestyling whatever weird abstract stuff
and
came
out. And you went
me.
Into a different level where you just didn't know what you were
doing. I didn't even know, and afterwards it was like 40 minutes
wow.
straight. Yeah.
Can you still go to that? Can you still get that? Just seems like that seems like a drug you would chase forever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's like that seems like a feeling you would want to have all the
yeah.
time.
Yeah. You know, I can get that at times on stage. With the band, you know, where you're just totally lost in the moment. But it also depends on the audience and the whole energy of the evening. You know, like the gig that we had at Mingo Fish Trap. Actually, you were six, so maybe you were, maybe yeah. you weren't feeling it as much. But I just felt like this really beautiful connection between the audience and their appreciation for us and us appreciating them for being there. And I definitely, there was moments where I really got lost. And that's when I can freestyle more as well. And
yeah.
when we have the little scat parts, if I'm not totally feeling it, it won't be as good a scat or as experimental as
right.
if I'm totally feeling it and in the moment. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. So what are the shows like at Geraldine's? That's a different kind of place.
It is. It's.
I mean, it's different. It's a great place,
mm-hmm.
and I've seen some music there, but I've seen more. I think I saw three acoustic dudes.
Yeah, I think they do acoustic during the week, and then they'll do full bands on the weekend.
Do they move some? They got to move some of that stuff out of the way so people can dance, right?
You know, actually, it's interesting
really.
That you said that because Lauren, that's booking the music there, yeah, she's great. She really is a great person. She was saying the first time when we played that. She is been in discussions with them about possibly moving that furniture. So they were going to feel out the first couple months and see, you know, once they've got everybody in, how it's going to be, and maybe with a goal to take out that furniture. Which I think would be really good, because then those people that are just coming in to hang out and just have some drinks can then have a place to stand at the front there and enjoy the music and dance.
What time do you guys play there? I'm going to come. I think I'm off that night, actually.
Cool.
I think I'm playing Thursday and Friday that week and not Saturday.
I think we start at 10 p.m.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there an opening band?
Nope.
It's just you guys. Do you guys play a long time?
I think it's 90 minutes. It's an hour and a half.
Because, you know, the thing is, with the kind of music that you play, like, I'm in a cover band, this band Skyrocket, and we play a lot of corporate stuff, and we play a lot of weddings and stuff. But if you took any of us to play our own music at these places, they would never want us there.
Right.
But the dance factor to your music lends itself to maybe being able to sneak into these higher-paying gigs because you have that groove.
Yeah.
We do have a little... a fairly successful track record of some private gigs.
Yeah.
They've let us do our originals as well as covers.
Well, it seems like that would be fun because you can, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like your songs are like, you could say they were songs, you know, that you just never heard these hits. They were really famous in England or something. You know what I mean? Because it's hard. I mean, it's hard to make a living playing music.
Yes,
it absolutely is. Yeah, we've just been saying, man, we need to get those private gigs more again and really push that as well. That the private gigs allow you to do what you really want to do, you know, and finish recording the album and talking about going on a tour this year for 2016. You know, if you just played in Austin as a 6 or 8 piece band trying to make a living that way, it's never going to happen.
Never
going to
happen.
Like, we still have day jobs right now to support.
Of course.
The music.
Almost everybody does.
Yeah.
I mean, Paul McCartney doesn't have a day job. You know what I mean? But, like, pretty much everyone else, like, you got to do something.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Absolutely have to. I mean,
What do you do?
I work for an inventor, and I've worked for him for...
Really?
Yeah. Nearly 4 years.
That's the coolest thing I've ever heard.
he's a pretty quirky guy. But yeah, no, it's good. It's just, you know, he's more interested in the tactical survivalist market. And it's not the thing that I'm, you know, necessarily.
That's not your passion.
The tactical
survivalist market is not your passion.
No. But it's a really fun job. You know, one day he's asking me to take photographs for him. And another day, I mean, I have to run the office and the operations side of things, but every day is a different day with my boss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Nick, you're at Austin Music Foundation.
I am. I'm at the Austin Music Foundation.
Yeah, that's a great place. I've had meetings with you.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. Saw you last week.
I saw him last week at a meeting. I didn't really do anything at the meeting. I feel bad when I go to those meetings and I'm just kind of like, what? Oh, okay.
No, you're great, man.
Oh, thanks. It's almost like I was fishing for that. So... there was an article that came out last week in the Houston Press about rock being dead and all this kind of stuff. But the stuff that I connected, it was a longer article, and what it went into was more about that making a living kind of thing and how difficult it is. Mm. And you guys have a band, like 6 to 8 pieces. That's
right.
That's tough. And you don't do any tracks? Do you do tracks when you play live?
Backing tracks? No, like this is all live. Yeah.
Good.
All live. Yeah, you know, we've...
Do you ever feel stupid? Like, because then you do... I'm not saying that. I feel like it. I'm in the band that I'm in, Skyrocket, that's a cover band. There's 7 of us.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no tracks.
Mm-hmm.
But you go see, like, Spasmatics, nothing against them. Mm-hmm. There's, like, 4 dudes. And there's tracks, but they're cleaning up.
Right.
More than we are.
Right.
So,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Do you ever,
does it ever?
I mean...
To me, there's nothing replaces 7 people doing something in harmony.
That's exactly how I feel, too. Yeah. And I understand, like, the business decision behind it.
Sure.
I never got into music to be like... Oh, I'm going to make a business out of this. I understand that you have to treat it like a business, But that wasn't my primary goal in getting into this. My primary goal was to make music that I hope is good, that I hope people appreciate, that I love to do. I love being creative. I love creating things. It was never about being as efficient business-wise as possible. And there's merit to that for sure, but I like to think that we can do it our way too.
I think you can. And I think it's important that the bands, that there's a style of music that's going along with what those do. And then some people are just doing the tracks because they can't afford to take that many people with them.
Yeah.
But there is a need to keep, I think, to keep that experience alive.
Mm-hmm.
Like 1, 2, 3, 4, that. Like that's where you're going. There's no computer telling you, there's no grid, there's nothing. You're like, that dude just said 4 and it's time to go. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm trying to think what, I think I was watching some Freddie Mercury videos last week. You know, I go through my little phases and I just loved him and his showmanship and what a fantastic band they were and what a great musician and writer he was. So I had like a Freddie evening where I'm like looking up all his stuff and, I like reading the comments, just seeing kind of what people's opinions are and everything. And so many people were like, man, where has this good music gone? You know, to what is really popular that's out there, you know, and you can find great stuff. But I love that, you know, when I read people's comments, it seems like it's not that people have stopped loving live music. It's just that the big corporations have changed that. It's not that that is what the people wanted, you know. It's just the way that the big record labels and the people that have more dominance have manipulated the market and changed it, you know, what the artists that they sign and the kind of mass-produced stuff that they bring out. Which then, you know, if for people that are discovering music, they just listen to that stuff. But I still believe that there is a huge amount of the population that still appreciates, you know, live music and will support that, even if that's not being fully presented all the time. And
it's tough too, because I think in a way we see it mostly because we're in music, but across the board, like a friend of mine who's an author and a successful author was in town this weekend, and we had breakfast on Saturday. And I mean, a successful author by that, his books go into the black, not like he's not Stephen King, but I mean, he's had success writing. And I mean, there's not, he just sold a screenplay this last summer. And it's just like the amount of money, like across the board and everything. I mean, you think that those guys that make those Netflix shows, like, they can't make that much money. I mean, that sort of like bringing, like there's just not a lot of, like Star Wars is what's making a lot of money right now, and that's about it.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and Adele.
Yeah.
And Adele.
She's on the front cover of Time magazine this month.
Well, she sold like 3 million records in a week, in a time when only one person sold 1 million records in a year.
Wow.
You know,
they were saying it was interesting about her because she's one of the only artists that she doesn't really do the social media thing and present herself where she's really putting herself out there all the time. Like, she totally disappears and lays low and then brings out an album and it's really big. And, you know, they were saying in an interview that not many artists can do that anymore, but she can, you know. She doesn't have to...
Well, there's also not a lot of records coming out that you can buy for your grandma or your nephew.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
It's kind of a weird record to get your nephew. Like, hey, check out the new Adele album.
Yeah. I've not listened to it all, but we had it on a station at work. I think it was like the Florence and the Machine station on Pandora, and it kept bringing up some of Adele's new stuff. And I mean, it definitely started to go that more. I think it's got some electronic stuff in there, and, you know.
It's definitely, like, stuff my grandma won't be, like, she won't freak on it or anything. You know, like, she won't, nothing will bum her out on there.
Yeah.
There's, you know, I think she's amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a thing going on, just her vocal track from Saturday Night Live, just her vocal singing Hello. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty unbelievable. Like, that's just unbelievable. But her jams don't rock my world.
Yeah, the jams weren't rocking my world. But yeah, if you look at her earlier stuff as well, and all the... She had a lot of live recordings when she was first starting out, and they were great. You know, she really does have a good voice.
Did you guys meet Snoop?
Kate did.
Briefly. And I had to like, bust my way through security, because those dudes were, like, really tough and pretty mean, being dudes.
They were good at their job.
They were very good at what they did, yeah. And they were like, nobody's meeting him. And then one of the ladies that worked at ACL Live helped me bus past and and get to meet him very briefly. And he was full of love. Like, I definitely got a very nice vibe from him, but just his security, which, you know, they got to do what they got to do, is were really tough.
And he smelled like cinnamon, right?
Cinnamon. I know what he smells like. He smells exactly like the Chronic and this cologne that I'm forgetting the name of, that an old friend of mine that owned this place, Steamboat. Alex is friends with him too, and AJ.
The legendary Steamboat.
Steamboat. The dude that owned that place. When I met Snoop Dogg, I hugged him, and I turned to my friend Anar, and we both went like, he smells just like Danny. It wasn't cinnamon, though. Maybe it smells different now. Maybe he's changed his cologne. He still smokes weed, though, right?
Oh, yeah. I think...
Came out on stage with a double long blunt.
He came out with this... I don't know if it was real or not, but I'm assuming it was.
It was
huge. Yeah.
I was in a studio called Skip Sailor in Los Angeles mixing a record, and he was working with DJ Quick in another one of the studios. And they were smoking so much weed in there that this guy named Marsberg, who was his joint roller at the time, asked, because we were all hanging out and playing ping pong together in like the free area, like with Nate Dogg and all these other guys.
Cool.
And this is so surreal, because this guy Marsberg, he would just like, he would cut open a cigar, he would gut it, and then he'd fill it with weed, he'd put it back together, and he'd just walk over and hand it to them in the studio. And then when they opened the door to the studio, you just heard the bass. And you just saw these silhouettes of dudes just kind of moving like this. The group, but just their silhouettes, because it was so smoky in there.
Yeah.
But the weirdest thing is, we watched the Clinton impeachment hearings with this guy Mars. Like, we were all watching it. Like, Warren G came in for a little while and watched the Clinton impeachment hearings with us. Isn't that surreal?
That is.
And then it all
surreal.
Ended with Snoop asking me why I was crying. He did.
He did?
Yeah. He said, "What's wrong? Why are you crying, man?"
What'd you tell him?
I just had to fire the guys that were working on my record. It was real sad.
Aww.
I know.
That is sad.
Man.
It's so funny, though, to have that. We saw him every day. He didn't hang out with us or anything, but that day I came out, and I was like obviously something was going on. Mm. And he was like, "Man, you all right? Why are you crying?"
Aww.
Terrible Snoop imitation.
Yeah.
So he's not Snoop Lion anymore? That was just a quick phase?
That was a phase. He is back to being Snoop Dogg.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
commercially, I don't know about in his private life. I don't know about... I don't know, like...
Yeah, right?
Philosophically, I'm not sure what's going on in his mind or anything, but...
You know, what was crazy, you know, we went out to the front into the audience to enjoy it when he came on after we'd played for him. And it was just like hit after hit after hit.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy's been around now for
like
7 years.
Yeah, it just like blew my mind that the whole show was just, everybody knew the songs. Like, it's just hit after hit after hit. Yeah.
It was like, it was really cool and it was really surreal. But it wasn't until we actually were done and I got off stage and walked out of the audience and started watching Snoop Dogg being just like,
yeah,
oh my God, I was up there 15 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And now Snoop Dogg is doing his entire repertoire.
Yeah.
It was crazy. It was something
that's
else.
You know, I just had to, I did this thing a few months ago about favorite places to play or something like that. And mine is that, that's one of my favorite places to play is ACL. We do some private stuff there. We don't like just go there and play, but
mm-hmm.
the coolest thing is like like Coldplay might have been there last night, or Snoop Dogg, you know what I mean? Or Cheap Trick, or some, you know, someone really cool.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty, it's pretty awesome. And it's so nice when you go play there. It's like so much better than anywhere else.
Oh, yeah. They've got like these beautiful
it's exactly what you want. Yeah. The mirrors with the lights around it, your own bathroom. And
So, and then they have all the catering, you know, and the other area for all the staff and for all of us as well to go. Yeah, it really is. It's a proud moment for, I think, everybody. Yeah.
Do you guys get out of town much to play?
We are just starting to get out of town. We've done the odd stuff in the past out of town, but it's
like
only
where you go
been
to Houston and Dallas.
Houston,
San Antonio.
We're playing at the Foundry in Dallas, aren't we, on February 13th.
Yeah.
And then we were just talking about touring as well, so starting to branch out into Louisiana.
Do you have a vehicle?
We don't have a band vehicle, but we have a bunch of like fuel efficient SUV crossovers in our band. So
and our sax player's
kind of
got a really big van. That's so we've managed to just do two cars before in the past.
That's great.
With all of us, just with Carlos's van and then one other car. Yeah.
Good. I worry about that stuff. That's it's tough.
It is.
So I wish you guys a lot of luck. If you're in Dallas or in Houston or in any of these places or anywhere in the world and you're listening, you can find out where KP and the Boom Boom are going to be by going to kpbbmusic.com, right?
Yes, kpbbmusic.com, yeah.
Is there anything I'm missing? People find your music on Spotify and these places as well?
Sure can, yep.
No, I was going to say, I think we got SoundCloud as well, have we?
SoundCloud?
Oh, that's via the website, So you can find our stuff on our website.
On your website, there's videos, there's music, there's articles, there's the bio telling the story.
Yep.
Is there anything I'm missing? Is there anything you want the people to know?
I guess just if people are still wondering what our sound actually is, I would say, we say it's future soul. So it's like reinventing soul. And, you know, we incorporate elements of R&B, jazz, hip-hop, you know.
Some electronica, too.
Yeah, some electronic stuff. And it's like a breath of fresh air. Two different people said that on Saturday when we played at Flamingo Cantina, and I just thought that was so nice, you know. It's challenges people, and but you can still groove to it and move to it. So I would say, if you want to hear something new that's full of soul and positivity, then you should come check it out.
Yeah.
And we got a series of live in-studio performances coming out soon, too. We got three
great
songs with Omar and
AJ
did the video.
Oh,
We went back and
then AJ directed a video for you. One of my favorite directors right now going on.
He's great.
I just had him in here last week, and I was asking him if he was. I don't know why I don't ask him this in regular life, but like, is this a thing? Like, if somebody, like, does he want to be an editor or a director or like, you know what I mean? Because he's got such a great. We do a cooking show together.
You do
on the internet, yeah.
Oh, okay. That's so cool.
Cooking and drinking with Johnny and AJ, and like he knows, like, when you watch it, it's well done. Like, he knows what he's doing with that shit.
Yeah.
And he's got a real sensitivity in editing and, like, putting something together
really nice.
Yeah. That's great. When does that video come out? When the record comes out?
We're gonna kind of release it leading up to the record, I think. So we got three different videos. We'll probably stagger the release.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll release one next month as soon as it's ready, really. Mm-hmm. We're hoping in the next couple of weeks we finally get everything back.
All right. Yeah. And if you're listening from far away, you guys are probably going to do South by Southwest stuff. Like, even if you don't get into the thing, you're going to be doing some.
Yeah, we definitely do stuff every year. You know, we've done less shows just because, you know, when we first started doing South by, you
did
think you have to play every day. And, you know, it's a total, can I swear on here?
I think I've sworn like 18 times.
It's like a total clusterfuck, you know, logistically, trying to figure out how you get your equipment to a bar with all the roads just jammed and closed. And
this is the thing with that thing. Essentially, this is going to be and has the potential to be the most important performance of your band's career so far. This is in the parking lot of a hot dog place and you've come from fucking Japan to do this fucking thing, and it's a throw and go with like half of the mains are out, two of the monitors aren't working because the last band blew them out, like a fucking kick drum, you know, you're on a rented, like, oh my God.
It's terrible.
I've had in an official showcase way, a showcase so bad that in the fourth song, my lawyer just nodded no and walked out the door.
Wow. I had a really bad one with, you know, I used to sing backing vocals with T-Bird and the Bricks. You know,
they broke up.
Great guys. Yeah, they broke up just, you know, years of touring and
I know,
and
I like that Harmonism album, though.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
And we played an official showcase at one of the bars on Rainy Street, and the band before us was a German band. They had, like, girls with their boobs out, and they were throwing beer everywhere. They broke the monitors. And the guys were telling them to stop because they're looking at the girls with their boobs out, you know, the sound guys.
Yeah.
So by the time we went on, sound ordinance was about to start. We had like 10 minutes or something to play.
Yeah.
And after the second song, I mean, Tim's monitor wasn't even working in his mic, so he had to go grab my mic. And then they were just like, that's it. And it was like, wow, that was our showcase. Like, two songs with the monitors out.
But
like,
imagine if you were still living in UK and that was your showcase.
Oh, it was awful. I felt so bad for those guys. And I'm thinking about all the bands that are even from Austin, that come in internationally, thinking that this is the big thing. Yeah. And then
you walk into the parking lot of a thing and they just put up this PA. They're not even sure if it works. Go ahead. You got 40 minutes. Go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ah. Did you see somebody...
But it's still great, right?
I mean, it's still great. It's still a great week, yeah.
And it's to me, it's healthy to have that. It's almost like, to me, less of a... What I see it working for is when you have an album that's either about to come out or just came out, you can get in front of a lot of publicity folks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As far as like, oh, I was on stage and Seymour Stein walked by and signed me to an 18,000, you know, record deal to, you know, that I don't think really happens.
Yeah.
Not anymore. No.
No, but it's a good time.
For sure.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And look, I'm going to come see you guys at that Geraldine's. I think I'm off.
Cool,
my
man.
Phone isn't here, but I'm going to find out now and then I'm going to go. It's going to be great. What are those shows? What does it cost to go to a show at Geraldine's
on
a Saturday?
It's free. Yeah.
So I thought it was free. The rest of the things I've seen there have been free.
Yep. All the music's free there. You know, the drink's probably going to be bumped up a couple of dollars.
It's a classier, you know.
But it's great. The cocktails are amazing.
It's not Beerland.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And that's nothing against Beerland, but it's just a different style of place.
Yeah.
And you take an elevator up and there's fancy people and you can get some nice food.
Yeah, the food's amazing there. And it's just a beautiful place to play. Like, you know, every so often I like a bit of sophistication. So
me too.
I appreciate it, yeah.
As I get older in life, I go to sophisticated places. I do. That's weird. Hey guys, thank you for coming.
Thank you for having us,
Sean.
Everyone, check them out. KP and the Boom Boom at kpbbmusic.com. They are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, SoundCloud. But just go to kpbbmusic.com and you can find out all about them, hear their music, see the videos, find out where they're playing, see their photos. There's a nice photo gallery. And it's good to see you guys. I bet we're going to see a lot of each other.
Something in the air that only love can bring. The echo of your presence is a precious thing.
All right, KP and the Boom Boom. Don't forget, if you're in Austin, they're playing tomorrow night, January 23rd at Geraldine's in the Van Zandt Hotel. Or if you are not in Austin, you can find them at kpbbmusic.com. You'll find them on the iTunes, wherever you find music. They're fantastic people. I want to thank Jen for helping me set that up. I want to thank them for coming by. Great conversation. Hey, don't forget, while you're out there looking up KP and the Boom Boom online, you can like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? You will find updates, photos of me with guests, including KP and the Boom Boom, links to shows as I put them out every Tuesday and Thursday. And hey, seriously, if you like one, help us spread the word by sharing it on social media, on Twitter, on Facebook, wherever you can. All right? Thank you so much. Let's hear some more music from KP and the Boom Boom. Don't forget they're playing tomorrow night, January 23rd at Geraldine's in the Van Zandt Hotel in Austin. If not, find them at kpbbmusic.com. Have a great weekend. Let's get down.
Feel it.